We all use euphemisms every day to avoid uncomfortable words or ideas, often without really thinking about it. When did you tell someone that a family member has died? Did you use the D word, or did you say that so-and-so has passed? In the news, you might hear the phrase, challenging economic environment. Well, we all know we're talking about hard times. Author Ralph Kies argues in a new book that while saying what we mean takes a higher order of intelligence, it takes an even higher order to not say what we mean while still conveying our thought. So what euphemism do you use and why? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Ralph Kies joins us here in Studio 3A. His new book is Euphemania, Our Love Affair with Euphemisms. And it's nice to have you with us again.
Good to be here, Neil.
And you say that, in fact, well, euphemisms, a lot of them are used to, well, be prim or accept, you know, some prude,
sure.
Prudery ideas, but that a lot of them are also have an element of wordplay in them.
Oh, euphemisms can be incredibly playful and a lot of fun, very creative. Shakespeare was an expert at creating euphemisms in the field of sex, death, what have you. I love, you mentioned death, some of the euphemisms we have in that area. Like the French talk about eating dandelions by the root.
that's sort of like pushing up daisies.
Exactly. It's their version. But as one euphemism collector noted, wouldn't it be like the French to make a food event out of death?
Event, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. Event is perfect. That happens a lot in the military when they talk about an event, an unfortunate event. You might figure somebody died, you know, but let's say by friendly fire or collateral damage. Getting back to going offline is one of my favorite new euphemisms for death. And just before coming here today, I got an email from a high school classmate saying, I have a friend who worked for a life insurance company, and when one of their policyholders became eligible for his benefits to go to his heirs, they said he was post-retirement.
I've often heard in the sports business, particularly with memorabilia collectors, he's not signing anymore.
Oh, okay. That's a new one on me. I love it.
So that's a.
Euphemism,
you say, is an accurate barometer of changing attitudes that in fact, many originate from specific events and places.
Well, you think about what we used to have to euphemize. A lot of it was to avoid blasphemy. You know, we couldn't say God, so we said Gad. We couldn't say Jesus Christ, so we said Jeepers. Or getting back to the creativity, cheese and rice, grease us twice. A University of California professor a century ago collected some remarkable euphemisms to avoid being blasphemous. Sex is a perennial, body parts, body functions. But today, we're much more likely, you know, we feel freer to discuss body parts or sexual activity more directly. But we're much more likely to euphemize in the area of food, in the area of money, and in the area of killing and dying. Now, let's take food. At one time, Patagonian toothfish was freely available to anyone because nobody wanted to eat it, until a very clever entrepreneurial sea importer renamed it Chilean sea bass. Now, this harkbacks to a long tradition in which thymus glands became sweetbreads, or a body part that shall go unnamed became Rocky Mountain oysters or prairie oysters, you know, if we want to talk about creativity. The fish slime heads, again, nobody wants to eat a slime head, but
yeah, right.
Orange Ruffy sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
And that's what it was renamed. It's kind of euphemistic. Rapeseed oil, very problematic trying to sell that. And today it's done a lot better as canola oil. Now, you get into meat and converting meat. Converting animals into an edible foodstuff. Now, we used to say, oh, we slaughtered that animal, we butchered it.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, we process it because I think we're much more squeamish than our ancestors were about dealing with meat and killing meat in order to eat it. We harvest animals.
harvest animals.
Yes, we don't kill them anymore. We do harvest them.
David in Fremont, New Hampshire, emails the best euphemism ever. Mark Sanford, hiking the Appalachian Trail for pursuing an extramarital affair.
Yes.
It's one that comes prominently mentioned in your book.
Yes. Isn't that a wonderful one? And that illustrates how we often will take a current event and convert it into a euphemism that everybody who knows about the event knows what it means. You know, wardrobe malfunction, or he had a wide stance, or any number of those. In England in the swinging 60s and 70s, a woman was upstairs, with a guy behind a closed door in a room, and later when she came down and was asked what she was doing with the guy, she flushed and said, we were discussing Uganda. For a long time after that, discussing Uganda became a euphemism for sexual activity. Would you like to discuss Uganda?
And the case you cite in your book of the man with the unfortunate last name of Bug.
Bug. Oh, yeah, the poor guy changed his name was Bug, so he changed his name to Norfolk Howard. And then Norfolk Howard became a euphemism for Bug in London.
We checked into a hotel, CD hotel, and the room. The bed was full of Norfolk Howards.
I call it a carousel. In euphemania, I talk about the carousel ride of euphemisms, how some get contaminated, others get cleaned up. You think about just a simple phrase like hook up. Now, I'm old enough to remember when hook up simply meant, we got together. But now suppose today I were to say, well, I'm going to hook up with my wife in Grand Central Station. Well, gee, I don't think so. So this is the way euphemisms, what started out as a nice casual term became contaminated.
We're talking with Ralph Kies about his new book, Euphemania, Our Love Affair with Euphemisms. Which ones do you use, maybe without thinking of it even? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Chris is calling. Chris is with us from San Francisco.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show.
Sure.
These topics you've discussed so far are so rife with possibilities. I have to make two comments tangential to what I was going to say. But about sex, there's a book called Into Thin Air, in which the Nepalese Sherpas describe it as making soup, which I love because it's both, or making sauce, I'm sorry, making sauce, which is both a food analogy and a sexual one, which is great. So I love that one. But the one I wanted to comment on was this general thing that people say, usually after dropping some bomb on you, which is, I'm just saying. So it kind of... It's not, I didn't mean what I said, but it's, I'm just saying.
Right.
So if you can comment on sort of how that waters down what you just said,
right,
as negative as maybe, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, we all have ways when interacting with each other, and interacting, incidentally, is a word with all sorts of interesting possibilities. But I'm just saying is a way of saying, I really don't agree with what you just said, but so here's what I'm just saying.
No, it's just so-and-so has lost his job. I don't know if he was drinking on the job. I'm just saying.
I think it's
in that context.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a way of saying, right. I'm not one to disparage somebody, but... I'm disparaging somebody.
Got it.
So.
Well, and you think about, you might at one time have said, well, I'm really angry at you, or I'm really peed at you. Or nowadays you say, well, I've got issues with you.
Mm-hmm.
And issues, incidentally, is one of our favorite. George W. Bush said the economy had some issues beginning in 2007.
It's had some issues ever since.
Some issues very soon.
I hear this from Sarah. I use dag nabbit in lieu of cursing. Child-friendly, has the added benefit of occasionally putting a smile on an unsuspecting person's face.
Right. Now, it's interesting the way in families we come up with our own euphemisms that are only known to people within the family. In our family, when our oldest son was 13, we took a trip across country, and he decided that whenever we hit an unusually boring patch of countryside, we called it scenic. We said, this is really scenic, isn't it, David? Well, now in our family, scenic is our euphemism for boring. Man, that party was really scenic. And I think every family has euphemisms like that.
Yeah, probably every relationship, too.
Yes, every relationship, certainly.
Let's go next to Kurt. Kurt with us from Phoenix.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I don't use this euphemism, but it is something that sort of annoys me when other people use it, and that is inner city. Well, they'll say a teacher from their inner city school district, And, you know, really what they're saying is it's from a minority or a poor school district.
Right.
Or the slums, I think, is what we usually mean by that.
Well, and minority, as the caller says, it's where minority folks live. Urban is the same thing. It, you know, it's interesting how urban has gone from being just a word meaning city to now you have urban fiction, you have urban music, all of which alludes to being, you know, created by minorities.
Thanks, Kurt.
Thank you.
Here's an email. This is from Dan, emailing from Reno. I am a manager in the restaurant industry. One of my favorite euphemisms relates to terminating an employee. I say they have been promoted to guest.
I love it. Promoted to guest. Have to use that one sometime.
This from Frederick. Alice in Frederick, Maryland. As a child, I got confused by my grandfather's common use of euphemisms and would say as I headed off to bed, well, I think I'm going to kick the bucket rather than hit the hay. So it is important to get those straight.
Yes.
We're talking with Ralph Kies about his new book, Euphemania, Our Love Affair with Euphemisms. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And Ralph, as I suspect you know, your book was reviewed in the Wall Street Journal earlier today, and I wanted to ask you about a couple of the criticisms Eric Felton, the reviewer, had, one of which was that you use euphemisms that were, in fact, never used, including bombardiers no longer drop bombs. You wrote, they unleash vertically deployed anti-personnel devices, and he says, I don't know of anybody in the military who's ever used that expression.
Well, with a source of one, he says he called somebody in the, quote, weapons community and asked him, and that person said he had never heard it. And this is, 20 years after that phrase was first recorded, so he may be right, he may not be right.
But you have an example of its being used?
Well, I got it, as the reviewer indicated, from a book called Doublespeak Defined by William Lutz, who made a practice of collecting these euphemisms, jargony ones, and so forth.
He also notes that you said you had initially tried to differentiate euphemisms from various other things like jargon and slang and things like that, and found you couldn't do it. And he said it would have been useful if you had tried.
Well, I did at first, but I define a euphemism as a word we use. I call it a comfort word, a word we use in place of words that make us uncomfortable. And often that can be slang. For example, I think soldiers rarely will say, I killed someone. They will say, I waxed, I offed, I greased, I iced. Now, is that slang? Is that a euphemism?
Well, it's not euphemism because it's being just as blunt and direct as killed.
Not necessarily. I mean, I think that's a way of avoiding saying killed. I mean, killed is a very blunt term. I think, you know, waxed or offed or you know, now we say I lit them up. Sometimes you can say I neutralized them. Those are much more bland words than killed.
Let's go next to Harriet. Harriet with us from Cincinnati.
Hi, this is very timely. Last night my friend and I were talking with our 9-year-olds, and in her family they have a saying when you're playing a game, if you're winning, that you're up a tree. And she didn't know other people didn't use that saying, and her mother told her it came from her grandmother, who's from Austria. And I was wondering if you'd ever heard of it or knew where it came from.
I'd heard if you were winning that you were sitting in the catbird seat.
Yes.
That's the old Red Barber expression.
That's right.
But I've not heard up a tree in that context.
Okay.
I've heard up a tree. I've heard up a creek with an extra word added sometimes. I assume they mean more or less.
Without a paddle, I think,
without
was the word
paddle,
you're
yes.
Yeah,
you're
right, right.
I think they mean, I assume they mean more or less the same thing.
Well,
okay.
Anyway. All right. Thanks very much for the call, Harriet.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Tristan. Cribbed from a book, I enjoy the euphemism, transcortical high-velocity lead therapy, meaning to shoot someone in the head.
New one on me.
So that's
yes.
your bomb analogy there. This
yes.
is from Carlos, Web 2.0 euphemism. He is 404, meaning clueless.
Huh. I wonder what the genesis of that is.
I have no idea. It is interesting that the genesis of euphemism you trace back to the nurse of the muses?
Yes, was named Euphemia. And in Greek, you is good and theme is speaking. So it was good speaking. She was a good speaking person. And so when we speak good or speak well, we use euphemisms as opposed to dysphemisms, which are insulting terms. And incidentally, blaspheme is the antonym of
euphemism. Of eupheme, yes.
Yes.
I'm told, by the way, 404 is what comes up on the screen when the page is not found.
I see.
So.
But, you know, going back to some of the earliest euphemisms, one of the earliest ones known is bear. Back in, you know, way olden days, in primitive times, when, you know, you were living up close and personal with wild animals, bears, of course, were very, very scary animals, and so scary that we didn't even want to say their name. And in Northern Europe, they began to call them first the Bruins, which means the brown one, and then that converted into bear. And bear, of course, is the main word we use now for that animal, so much so that we don't even know what the original word was that bear euphemized.
This email from Chris: my family talks of dying as moving to Albuquerque. I'm not sure why, but it could be because we lived in New Mexico for so long. Moving to Albuquerque.
I won't ask what that says about Albuquerque, a city I've always loved.
Let's go to Heather. Heather with us from Oakland.
Hi. Yeah. Whenever I was like 4 years old, my mom went and said, you know, one day my dad took the dog to the vet, the old dog, and my mother told me very somberly that my dad had taken the dog, put the dog to sleep. I wasn't worried about it because my parents put me to sleep every night. And so after a few days, my mom says, I kept asking my mom, where's the dog? Where's the dog? My mom kept saying, Dad had the dog put to sleep. And finally she said, I said, but yeah, but when is he coming back? And she says, but the dog's dead. And I said, the dog's dead. Oh, no, right now I'm crying, right? And she finally realized that I didn't understand what she had meant by put the dog to sleep. Well, of course, that night she says, yeah, go put the children to sleep. And it made me say a prayer, and now I lay me down to sleep, hope to God my soul to keep if I die before I wake. Well, I started a bunch of strangers. I'm to sleep every night.
I'm sure your psychiatrist has benefited handsomely from this, Heather. Thank you.
Also,
thanks very much for being with us, Ralph.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.